This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodrell Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more details, see jodcast.net.
Well, the night sky in June. June is perhaps not the best month to be an astronomer in the Northern Hemisphere. It's dark for just a few hours, and in fact, if you're in the north of Scotland, it doesn't really get fully dark at all. But there is actually a little compensation to that that we'll come to later on. Well, if you have a look at the sky at around sort of 11 p.m, and you've got to sort of wait up that long before it really does get dark, first of all, overhead towards the north is the lovely constellation of Ursa Major, the Great Bear. And of course, the part that we always think about is in fact called the Plough in the United Kingdom, but in America it's the Big Dipper, which I believe is named after the ladle that the farmer's wife used to dish out the soup at lunchtime for the farmhands on the farm. That's actually full of interesting objects. And if you go to the night sky page on the Jodrell Bank website, or just put night sky into Google, you'll find a fairly detailed description of Ursa Major, one of our most interesting constellations. As one moves southwards, one first crosses the constellation of Hercules, and it has what's called a keystone of stars, wider at the top than at the bottom, like the keystone at the top of a bridge. And halfway up, or perhaps, sorry, two-thirds of the way up, the right-hand side, binoculars will show a slightly fuzzy blob. With a telescope, you see the most beautiful and magnificent globular cluster that we have in the Northern Hemisphere. It's called M13, the 13th object in Messier's catalogue of interesting objects in the sky. Below Hercules is a large and not particularly prominent constellation called Ophiuchus. Interestingly, part of the ecliptic, the path of the sun, goes through Ophiuchus. There are actually 13 constellations along the ecliptic, but this one is conveniently forgot. I mean, would you like anyone to say, or would you like to say, I'm an Ophiuchan? You know, what star sign are you? So it's perhaps not surprising it's being ignored. The sun actually spends longer in Ophiuchus than it does in Scorpius. Well, to the right of Hercules is a rather lovely little arc of stars making up what we call Corona Borealis. That's the northern crown, rather like Aurora Borealis, or the northern lights. And to the right of Corona Borealis is Bootes, with one very nice bright star called Arcturus. Now, rising in the east towards the middle, towards the end of June, we have this lovely part of the sky comprising the constellations of Cygnus the Swan, Vega in the constellation of Lyra the Lyre, and below them, the constellation of Aquila the Eagle with its bright star Altair. Along with Deneb, which is the brightest star in Cygnus, Deneb, Vega, Altair make up is what is called the Summer Triangle. I believe that name was made up by Sir Patrick Moore. Part of the constellation of Cygnus the Swan looks very much like a cross, the central part, and that's called the Northern Cross. If you've got binoculars, try starting from Altair and move about a third of the way towards Vega. As you do so, you actually cross a fairly dark part of the sky. It's called the Cygnus Rift. You are looking towards the Milky Way, but there's rather few stars visible in this region, not because they're not there, but because there's a great cloud of dust in the way, so we don't see them. But rather nicely, in front of that cloud of dust, we see a rather nice little asterism, or possibly a cluster. It's actually called Brocky's cluster, but it's more normally known as the coat hanger, because it looks just like a little coat hanger upside down. A line of stars and then a little hook, which actually is the wrong way round as we see it with binoculars from here, but well worth looking for. Just go one third of the way from Altair towards Vega, and you should spot it quite easily. Now, below Ophiuchus, we have two summer constellations, Scorpius with its lovely star Antares, a red giant, and then to the left of that, we have Sagittarius, the teapot. Now, sadly, from the northern climes of the United Kingdom, we do not see these very well, so it's a good reason to go on holiday to somewhere like the Adriatic or Cyprus, and in fact there, they appear much higher in the sky, and you can actually see not only the lovely red star Antares, but some of the nebulae and clusters in Sagittarius as well. And I'll come back to Sagittarius when I talk about the Southern Hemisphere a little later on. So there we are. You don't have many hours to observe the sky, but it actually is quite an interesting sky if you do take the effort. Now, what about the planets? Well, Jupiter is visible in the morning sky. It rises, in fact, at about 1 o'clock at the beginning of the month, and by about midnight, both UT, by the way, at month's end. It's actually getting further away from the sun, as one would expect, and so getting somewhat easier to pick up. It rises rather sooner than the sun does. However, because the ecliptic has a relatively low angle to the horizon, and because Jupiter is nearly at the bottom of the ecliptic in terms of declination, it never gets very high in the sky, no more than about 25 degrees. So we see it through quite a bit of atmosphere, and that does actually upset our view. One thing to do if you're using a small telescope is to try and remove some of the colour, because the atmosphere acts like a little refractor. It splits the image of Jupiter into the various colours, which are sort of not quite on top of each other, so blurring it. If you use either a green filter, say, or even better, I've actually used what's called an O3 filter. It's a narrow band, almost a single wavelength filter in the green. Then, of course, you have no refraction effects, and you certainly get a clearer image. Its magnitude is slowly increasing from about -2.5 to -2.7. Well, Saturn. We've had a good few months observing Saturn fairly high in the sky. It's lying in Leo, which is fairly up along the ecliptic, but actually it's quite low below Leo. It sort of sticks down between two other constellations. But nevertheless, it's still visible as the sky darkens after sunset. The rings are almost edge-on. They're about 3.5 degrees to the line of sight at the moment, and that makes Saturn rather less bright than it would normally be. It's only at magnitude of about +1, which isn't really all that bright. There is a compensation to this, though, and I'll come to that in the highlights. The rings, by the way, get almost perfectly edge-on later in the year, although not too easy to see from where we are, and it won't be until 2016 before they're wide open again. Mercury. Well, it reaches what is called western elongation on the 13th of June. That's when it lies at its greatest angle from the sun and is seen before sunrise. Again, however, its elevation will be very low, and binoculars will almost certainly be needed to spot it. And look, be careful using binoculars. Observe before the sun rises. At magnitude +0.6, it's not all that bright, but you may well spot it if you have a very low northeastern horizon. Mars and Venus are also in the morning sky. Mars still remains low, but it's rising increasingly earlier than the sun as the month progresses, and with a magnitude of +1.2, is actually not that difficult to spot. Even so, it's not going to make an angle of more than about 23 degrees to the horizon before the sun rises, so it'll be fairly low down in the sky. And we really have to wait perhaps till October, September to begin to see it well. And finally, Venus. As I've just said, that's also visible in the pre-dawn sky. It will only be about 14 degrees above the horizon as the sun rises on the 1st of June and becomes somewhat easier to spot later in the month. It's at magnitude about -4.2 at the middle of the month, and in fact just to the lower right of Mars, as we shall come to. A nice feature about Venus is that its phase, that's the area of the surface that we see illuminated, changes obviously as it orbits the sun, but so does its distance. The sort of apparent angular size of the surface that we see illuminated stays more or less constant, and so Venus remains at about magnitude -4.2 to 4.4 throughout much of the time that we see it. Okay, well, let's come to the highlights of this month. Back to Saturn to start with. And this really is something for those who have a reasonable sized telescope. One advantage of having the rings almost edge on is that there's rather less glare from the light, and that makes it easier to spot the satellites that orbit Saturn. And just rather nicely, on June the 10th, five of its satellites nicely line up to the east of Saturn. And that should make a very nice sight in a telescope of perhaps 6 or more inches, although you'll see some of the brighter ones even with a smaller telescope. You should easily spot Titan at magnitude 8.4 and Rhea at magnitude 9.8. A bit harder are Dione at plus 10.5 and Tethys at plus 10.3. And if you've perhaps got an 8 or 10 inch telescope, maybe you'll get Enceladus as well at plus 11.8 magnitudes. Now, of course, the sky is never going to be that dark. And one trick to pick up faint star-like objects, as these satellites are, is to increase the magnification as much as you can, so you only really encompass Saturn and its satellites, and maybe even try and push Saturn a little bit off the field of view to prevent the glare. Because as you increase the magnification, the sky brightness background reduces, but the brightness of the individual satellites stays the same, so they stand out better. That's a very good trick for looking at all sorts of point-like objects. You see them easiest at the highest magnifications you can use. Well, on June the 19th, I've mentioned that Mars and Venus are fairly close together in the pre-dawn sky. And in fact, on the 19th, Venus passes just 2 degrees below Mars. And you also rather nicely have a thin crescent moon lying just 7 degrees up and to the right of Mars. So if you don't mind getting up pretty early, at about 3:30 UT, you have a chance of seeing that. Neptune is very close to Jupiter this month. And on June the 4th, Neptune at magnitude 7.9, so that should be visible in binoculars, lies up and to the right of Jupiter, which has a magnitude of minus 2.5. It'll make up a very nice triangle with Jupiter and a 5.1 magnitude star, Mu Capricornus, which is down to its lower right. So on the 4th of June, you get quite a nice little equilateral triangle. And given a transparent sky, you should easily spot it in 8x40 binoculars, just half a degree away from Jupiter. Obviously, as Neptune doesn't move across the sky very quickly, it remains very close to Mu Capricornus throughout the month, but during that time, Jupiter moves somewhat further to the left. And just one final thing to say. June is a very good time to spot what are called noctilucent clouds. They're also known as polar mesospheric clouds, and are most commonly seen in deep twilight towards the north from our latitude in the United Kingdom, or anywhere between about latitude plus 50 to plus 70. They're the highest clouds that we can see in the atmosphere, in fact lying at heights of about 50 miles or 80 kilometres. They're normally too faint to be seen, and we only really see them when they're illuminated by sunlight from below the northern horizon, and that happens in midsummer, whilst the lower parts of the atmosphere are in shadow. It's a bit like you see the International Space Station for a few hours after sunset and perhaps an hour or so before dawn. It has to be high enough to be lit up whilst the sky is dark. Noctilucent clouds aren't fully understood, and they seem to be increasing in both frequency, brightness and extent, either more of them visible now than there have been in the past. And no one actually knows why. Some think it might be due to climate change. So look, on a clear, dark night, as light is draining from the northwestern sky, a while or so after sunset, of course, just take a look towards the north, and you never know, you might spot them. So that ends the section for the Northern Hemisphere listeners, but as usual, I'm saying something too for those that live in the Southern Hemisphere. And of course, in complete contrast, if June is one of the worst months in a sense for us to observe the heavens, it's one of the very best in the Southern Hemisphere. And it's not just because it's actually dark. It's because some of the most beautiful parts of the sky become visible to them. Now, if they look to the north from the southern hemisphere, you will actually see Leo, of course, upside down, and Saturn lying above it. So that's in a good position to see. But looking to the south, you have the most beautiful skyscape that I think I've ever seen, and I've only ever seen it once when I was in South Africa. Because the Milky Way is running, arcing across the southern sky, you have Scorpius with its bright red star Antares above Sagittarius down on the southeast. High up in the sky you have Crookes, the Southern Cross, and Centaurus. I've talked about those before. And then over towards the southwest, that beautiful region around Carina and Vela, with the Eta Carina Nebula shining really quite brightly. Low in the south, just to the west of south, in fact, we have above the south the Small Magellanic Cloud, up and to the right, the Large Magellanic Cloud, with this rather lovely nebula called the Tarantula Nebula. Also called 30 Doradus, in fact, because there's a little cluster of stars there that they thought was a star and called it 30 Doradus as one star. It is an enormous region of star formation, much, much larger than the Orion Nebula that we see in the Northern Hemisphere. And it is where, in 1987, we observed a supernova. Finally, just a quick word about Sagittarius, the teapot. If you imagine water pouring out of the spout of the teapot, it actually falls across a rather lovely open cluster called M7. Up to the left of that is another open cluster called M6, two very nice ones to observe with binoculars. And above the teapot, and just a bit to the right, is one of the brightest regions of nebulosity we have in the Milky Way. It's called the Lagoon Nebula. And that's a very rich and beautiful region to observe with binoculars. To be honest, anyone who's living in the Northern Hemisphere, I would say, get on a plane, go south either to somewhere around Cape Town and see the southern sky at its very best this month.